So, with a bit of good news, our next speaker is Liz Lawrence of the Regional Sec of the UCU.
Thank you, Chair. Can you all hear me, first of all? I'm standing up because I've...
There's a microphone at the...
Right, that might be easier.
I've taught in lecture theatre with brilliant acoustics and lousy acoustics for many decades.
Let me say, first of all, I'm sure if I could just respond to what's happened, that's not a big concession they've made. And actually, I don't think you should have applauded him. I understand the emotional feelings and the sense of release. It's good news that they're not going to throw you out for the next 48 hours. But, you know, this is a big, wealthy university, a Russell Group university. It's got plenty of space to have an occupation and the examinations. They could even afford to hire some extra premises if they needed to. So it wasn't a big deal. Okay. You can applaud me. Right, so can I say thank you for inviting me here to speak, and greetings of solidarity from the University and College Union. Now, as Martin said, many education workers particularly have been inspired by the student protests of recent weeks, starting with a magnificent demonstration, we mustn't forget it, of 50,000 people demonstrating against tuition fees on the 10th of November. Now, I and many of my fellow workers are delighted that younger people are saying no, that you're saying we're not going to pay for the crisis of the banking industry, and we're not going to accept a future where we have to graduate tens of thousands of pounds in debt, and then take on a mortgage to get on the property ladder, and then start saving up for our retirement because the occupational pensions have been trashed. You've really got to demand a better future, and you're quite right to do so. So please keep the campaign going. Now, like many MPs who are going to be voting on Thursday this week, about the future of tuition fees, I was the first person in my family to enter higher education. I benefited from free state education and from the expansion of the higher education sector. I benefited from a regime in which there weren't any tuition fees and there were in fact even student grants. Have you heard of student grants, or is it so far before your time that you wonder what I'm on about? I don't know. Now, I benefited not only because I've got a decent job now as a university lecturer. I benefited because by going to university, I got away from home. That wasn't so easy for young women at the end of the 60s. I benefited because I met people from different countries, different places. I had a much wider experience of life. And I also had the opportunity to develop my intellect and to study things I was interested in. And that was, you know, a benefit in many ways. And I think it's important to look at, you know, those aspects. And let me say, first of all, like many in my generation, I feel it's appalling that MPs who've had these privileges, these opportunities themselves, are prepared to vote to deny them to the next generation. There's a basic unfairness about that, which is just unconscionable, frankly. But I want to talk about some of the other issues. I often hear the phrase, the fight of our lives. And I think that's right. We are in the fight of our lives as students and as workers to defend the education system. We're facing cutbacks, doubling or tripling tuition fees, taking away all government funding from social sciences and humanities. We're facing both cutbacks. We're getting feedback and privatisation. And I want to explain that privatisation is just as much as a threat to education as the cutbacks. Because what they're trying to do is set up a world in which you just value the education as a benefit to the individual student in terms of how does getting this degree affect your future income, your earning potential when you get a job. So we're losing any notion of education as a benefit to society, that we as a society benefit by having more young people educated. We're asking students to consider it purely as an economic investment. And then, of course, you'll be really dischuffed with your lecturers if your degree in history or classics or sociology doesn't have the sort of earning power that's promised. And I work at a university where there's a great emphasis on employability. We're expected to educate students for employability. Now, employability doesn't mean you'll get a job, it just means you'll be employable. are really, this is a new form of subjugation of labour under capitalism, where you've got to make yourself employable. That means you've got to be flexible, you've got to be a go-getter, a can-doer, you've got to be able to work individually and as part of a team, you've got to be entrepreneurial and creative and full of initiative, but not question the goals of the organisation, and you've got to be able to start on the first day, hit the ground running in the favourite management parlance, and then go the extra mile. Well, it's exhausting when you think about it. It just makes me feel totally useless and inadequate because I don't feel I can do all these things. We have to reject this because what government's successively been doing has been substituting employability as a goal for something that used to be called full employment, the idea that everybody wanted a job would be able to find a job. So we've got to be campaigning for what we're in favour of as well as what we're against. And I think it's really important that students are demanding a real education. So there are the questions, first of all, about access. At one time, teaching in a post-92 university, a former polytechnic, I taught a lot of ex-coal miners, steel workers, women returners to education. They were great students because they brought their life experience. We had brilliant discussions because we had a mixed age group in the seminar group. Students brought their experiences from different times of history and so on. What's happening now, however, is those groups aren't coming into higher education so much. You know, once the fees came in, once the grants ended, people felt they couldn't take on that debt, particularly if they were already in their 40s. And I think the government is threatening to put us back to the 1930s in terms of what sections of the population actually go into higher education. Is it just going to be for a very narrow, privileged section of society? And for most people, there may be some type of further education provided, but it will be very much what business and industry think they should learn to make them employable, rather than an all-rounded education. So we have to stand up for education. We have to say we're in favour of an education which encourages critical thinking, which encourages you to see not only one or two, but actually many sides of an issue, many sides of a problem, which is about educating people as full human beings, educating citizens for a democratic society, as well, yes, as helping you to get a job when you graduate. And I really think it's important that students speak up to say we want a real education. We don't want the pseudo-empowerment which is offered, where we get a lot of focus on the student experience, which is a real buzz phrase at the university where I work. We must enhance the student experience. But we talk about enhancing the student experience, and I can see some of my comrades from Sheffield Hallam laughing. But meanwhile, resources often get cut, which clearly doesn't enhance the student experience, or the range of courses and subjects we teach may be shrunk. So we've got to demand a real education as part of this campaign. And that means education not only for employment, although we understand people want to get decent jobs on graduating, but education for life and for society. Let me just say a few things about the way forward. Because we're very concerned about what's happening to students today. Many of us feel education is becoming an anxiety-laden experience where you keep focusing on passing the set of assignments and not leaving gaps on your CV and all this sort of thing so that you make sure that you are employable, because you keep getting told what a tough world it is out there. We've actually got to change the world out there. And we've got to build worker-student alliances. We've got to be making the links, and I noticed these already been made in some of the speeches, and I thank the chair for her remarks. We've got to make links between decent conditions of service for the workforce in the sector and a good quality education for the students, which means we actually have to ask how much tuition a student is getting, what resources are actually going into their education. Now, there are a number of dates for our diaries ahead. We have obviously this Thursday coming up, and the London region of UCU has called for a demonstration as well as other protests. And obviously we hope there will be protests this Thursday around the first reading of the bill. I understand there's a second reading in January, and that clearly sounds like another opportunity for a focus for the campaign. Because I think it's brilliant the way the campaign's been built up, and it's important to keep the momentum going. The TUC has called a demonstration on the 26th of March, a national demonstration. My regional executive committee has just called on the TUC's regional executive to organise trains, not coaches, to that demonstration. And I think it's really important we argue for the mobilisation on the 26th of March, We want a demonstration of at least 500,000 people, preferably 1 million or 2. And we should actually be demanding that we don't send coaches from our big cities, we send trains with hundreds of people on them. That's the way to build that event. But we can't wait till the 26th of March. We've got to be doing things between now and then. The Right to Work campaign has a demonstration in Sheffield 2 weeks earlier on the 12th of March. I hope that's going to be a big national demonstration. And we need to find opportunities for protests, demonstrations, meetings, all sorts of events where we take up what the cuts are doing to people's lives and how we fight back. I hope that my union will be taking some industrial action in the new year. We have two disputes, if you like, in the pipeline. One is about the pensions issue, which has already been referred to. The employers are trying to reduce the terms of the university superannuation scheme. They have something called CARE, which stands for career average, and it means your pension gets calculated on your career average, not your final salary. So it's not very caring. It just means you get less money. To put it simply, there are similar threats to the teachers' pension scheme, and I hope those parts of us who are in TPS will be taking industrial action alongside the school teacher unions. I know the NUT's National Executive has called for action to defend TPS. We hope also to be taking action around job security and the other elements of our 2010 claim, which has not yet been settled. I do have the experience of sitting across the table from your Vice-Chancellor, who is the chair of the employers' side of the University Colleges Employers Association. All we've been offered is a 0.4% pay rise. First, they offered out as a non-consolidated one. That means it doesn't affect your pay for future years. They did move to 0.4% consolidated. We are underwhelmed with this generosity. And anyway, the main feature of our claim was we wanted a national agreement on job security because our chief concern at the moment is trying to protect jobs in the sector and education. Because if the jobs go, not only people not having pay and pensions, the workloads go worse and the quality of the student experience is harmed. So, you know, we need to unite our struggles. We need to set up a whole series of interim actions between now and the 26th of March. I hope come the spring we can be working towards nationally coordinated industrial action across the trade union sector, or to put it another way, a general strike to kick the Tories out. But of course, under the anti-union laws, I cannot advocate political strikes as a union officer. But thank you very much. Please do keep up the struggle, and it's really inspiring to see so many of you here today.